BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Nurse for the BDNG. So today I have the greatest pleasure of introducing Olivia Hughes, who's a Research Associate at the School of Psychology in Cardiff. Welcome, Olivia. And I also have Professor Andrew Thompson, who is Professor at Cardiff University and Cardiff of the Vale University Health Board. So again, welcome, Andrew, today to this podcast. And today we're going to be discussing the toolkit for parents of children with quite a rare condition called epidermolysis bullosa. So first of all, very welcome to this podcast. Andrew, would you mind just discussing and just telling our listeners today what the condition entails?
Okay, thanks Tina. It's really nice to have this opportunity to talk about this research project, which is funded by Deborah UK, and Deborah's a family of charities spread globally that support people living with and families in connection with Epidemia Bullosa, or EB for short. And actually the audience probably know about EB as much as we do, if not more, because we're psychologists and it's nurses, physiotherapists, doctors, dermatologists at the front line that are coming across and working with patients and families. But basically, Epidemia Bullosa is a collection of rare skin disorders with a very strong genetic component. And in its most severe form, the skin can be extraordinarily fragile and break very easily. So the Deborah charity is actually called the Butterfly Skin Charity because of that. So any sorts of trauma or friction can lead to the skin to blister. So the condition can be, in its extreme form, can be associated with itchiness, quite marked pain, and is actually quite demanding on the wider family in terms of the need for dressing changes. It can also have effects on growth and development and impact on bone health. And so it, like a lot of dermatological conditions, doesn't just affect the skin itself, but has that wider impact on nails as well as internally. It can lead to scarring. Is also associated with increased risk of skin cancer and actually mortality in relation to the condition itself. So I'm sure people will remember it from their dermatology training. It can be very, very severe and upsetting for both the sufferer and for the wider family. I don't know, Olivia, Olivia recently spent some time at Great Ormond Street. You might want to chip in with some other bits around the condition.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Andrew, you've summed up quite a lot of it, but the condition, I think, is just incredibly far reaching. It's not just the skin that it's affected. It affects the child. It affects the family around them, their siblings. It's more the family unit. They tend to cope together. The condition can impact parents' stress levels. Parents can experience a wide range of emotions, I think, from caring for a child with something like EB. There can be a lot of uncertainty about the future and how the disease will progress as the child gets older. They can encounter anxiety about how they're going to care for the child's fragile skin. There can be a lot of worry about causing the child harm, and particularly in the case of treatment as well, as there isn't a cure for EB, treatment surrounds dressing changes, bandage changes, and dressing the skin to protect it. Parents can have to find a balance between causing pain to their child and having to help them as well, because that's obviously how the skin is cared for. So there's a lot that parents can go through in providing care for their children as well. And its siblings can be impacted as well, who are in the same household, being part of the family unit where their brother or sister is going through all of this pain as well. So I think it's just really important to say that it affects the child and the wider family unit as well. There are a lot of complex emotions that families can encounter.
It's a really important point, Olivia, you know, that you're making, that, you know, it does involve the whole family, and, you know, the parents may not have EB as well. So even it can really impact just not the person that is living with the condition, the parents, but also the siblings. So it's a fantastic project that you've taken on. And we do know that EB is extremely, you know, it is rare. So some nurses that are listening today may never have come across it, but other nurses may have that experience. So Andrew, thank you very much for explaining today what it entails as well. So Olivia, I'm going to to you. So you have this project, which is so important, you know, the psychological aspect and, you know, this toolkit that's available for the parents of children with EB. So can you just briefly say to our listeners how you became involved? Where did it evolve from, this idea?
So what we wanted to do with this project really is fill a gap in psychological support by designing a sustainable toolkit that will be available for parents, that can be hosted on Deborah UK's website, that can provide practical tips, solutions, a range of psychological techniques for parents to manage the daily stresses of providing care for their child and really cope with their own emotions. And really where this has come from is a lot of the work that points towards things like mindfulness, self-compassion, that have been used with a range of different skin conditions. And I've recently completed my own PhD in Cardiff University that looked at using mindfulness to support families with conditions such as ichthyosis, eczema, ectodermal dysplasia, and other like long-term skin conditions as well. And what we found was that parents could be receptive to receiving psychological interventions such as mindfulness, but they have to be accessible because parents have a lot of additional responsibilities of care in their own daily routines. So anything that we create has to be able to be accessible for them to use on a daily basis. So really what we're trying to do is create a lasting resource that can be used as and when parents need it, really.
So this resource, Olivia, is it something that when, you know, when people are seen in clinic, parents are there with the child, is it something that is offered to these parents, or do they sort of access it through the charity, or how is it accessed?
So what we anticipate it being is an interactive PDF that will be hosted on Deborah UK's website. So parents will be able to download it and access it straight through there. And it will basically be a collection of psychological techniques, exercises that parents can do for themselves with their children as well, because we feel as well that it's important for family bonding, for there to be things for parents and children to do together. So we're aiming to make it as accessible as possible for all parents of children with EB.
Oh, that's fantastic, and a really absolutely amazing resource, you know, for actually our listeners as well, to be able to access as well and provide that extra support. And going back to you, Andrew, go on, you speak.
Sorry to jump in. No, I was just going to say that we haven't developed the resource yet, and this whole project that's funded by Deborah UK is about developing this resource and fitting it into their suite of things that they already offer. And lots of your listeners will know that the family of skin charities are immensely important to people, and a great resource for nurses in terms of signposting people to access the support that's available, both for psychological and emotional support, but also for practical support and advice on how to talk to your clinician to get the appropriate treatment that you need. And I mean, just going back to EB, although it's relatively rare, in its milder forms, because there are different types of EB, there's epidemia bullosa simplex, but there's also dystrophic epidemia bullosa and junctional epidemia bullosa. In its less severe forms, people don't often get to see a dermatology nurse until quite late in the day, because it's often underdiagnosed. But they do tend to be a very clear family history of the condition there. And I think dermatology nurses, particularly nurses working in primary practice, can play a key role in helping to diagnose the condition as well and recognize it and signpost people with milder forms for support. And often it's making that connection with families to get in touch with Deborah so that they can access all of the support there. And for people with the more severe forms of the condition, there is a need to sometimes even have respite care and support the disabilities that can accompany the disease. Absolutely. Sorry, I jumped in there with a long-winded response.
It's okay, Andrew. I was kind of going to ask you similar questions, because obviously we have got our primary, you know, like you said about the three different presentations with EB as well, and we do get milder forms. So are you aiming for this tool to be a sort of in the primary care setting and the secondary care setting? Is that the aim of the project, you know, to be of use for dermatology nurses in secondary care, but also advanced practitioners and nurses in primary care as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the most of the EB services are in dedicated specialist centres. So, for example, in Wales, people generally have to travel into London. Fortunately, there isn't a service specifically in Wales for EB. For the more severe forms of EB, families are having to travel. So that I think there's a few centres throughout the UK, and those centres do generally have access to psychological support. So there will be clinical psychologists working in those services already, and dermatology nurses with a lot of expertise around providing holistic care, and physiotherapists as well. There's often an MDT involvement required, and all of those people are of course working on support alongside dealing with the physical aspects of the disease. However, there's still a need for families to, when they return home, to be able to access easy techniques that they can fit into the busy family life, and that's where we think the charity can provide some additional support, and that's what we're aiming to do. And then of course for less severe forms, where people might be using the internet to try and find out information themselves, if you look at, like, on the NHS website, it does signpost people already to the Deborah charity, and so that's a great opportunity there for people to pick up the techniques directly themselves in that way.
Deborah is a fantastic resource, and looking at the website, I mean, it's a really good, helpful resource for healthcare professionals, and, you know, to have that support as well as a patient or a family member is fantastic. A quick question, do patients that have EB, does it take quite a while to diagnose them initially? Because obviously, like you say, it's really quite rare, and, you know, you may get different forms of it. Do you find that there's sometimes a delay for patients to be seen? So that obviously that can impact even more psychological distress. Is that common, Andrew?
I don't want to overstretch my expertise. My expertise focuses more on the psychological impact generally of skin conditions. But my understanding from talking to clinicians working directly with the condition, and from talking to the charity, that is the case, that there can be a delay, and actually misdiagnosis as well isn't uncommon.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, some of the rarer conditions that we have in dermatology, you know, there is quite often misdiagnosis or an average of years before they actually see the right people. So I think, you know, the more we do, the more we highlight the condition, the more we educate people as well, and the more we have the projects and the tools to support these people is fantastic, absolutely. So going back to you, Olivia. I know you've congratulations on completing your PhD, absolutely fantastic. I know how hard you worked on that. So where did this idea sort of come from originally? How did it all initially, you know, was it your cells that decided to do this, or where did it actually come from?
Oh, thank you, Tina, for the kind wishes. I think with an approach like mindfulness, there's been a lot of evidence over the last few years where it's been increasingly used to support people with a range of different health conditions, incorporating daily exercises, relaxation techniques, and basically learning to be more present in the present moment, learning to slow down and not get caught in negative thought patterns is a really valuable technique. And this could have a lot of promise for conditions that are affected by stress and for people encountering stressful situations. So really what my PhD looked at was how we could use an intervention based on mindfulness to support carers looking after children with conditions that were affected by stress, and really how that could improve care for the condition itself, the relationship between the parent and child, and just how mindfulness and learning how to take a step back, learning how to detach a bit from the stresses going on around you, how that can have a therapeutic effect for certain skin conditions and other physical health conditions as well.
Absolutely. Fantastic point to make there. And Andrew, I mean, obviously this is very much, you know, evolving and sort of, you know, the hard work is definitely been, you know, a lot of it has been completed, but obviously there's a bit of a journey going on here. So people that have been involved in the project, how, you know, what's the feedback been like? Has it been really positive, and do people engage?
I mean, this particular project is still in its early stages, so we're still recruiting to do the research that builds the intervention, because we want to build this from the bottom up and learn from parents. So we don't want to just come and say, da-da, this is something that we think is going to work as psychologists. We mm-hmm. want to learn from parents and also learn from expert healthcare professionals such as nurses who have got daily experience or relevant historical professional experience of actually meeting people's needs. So that's what we want to do. So we're taking the time to develop the intervention to get it right. As Olivia was saying, there's a history to this, in the so far as I've done work with other skin conditions using psychological interventions to build on parents' existing coping resources. And let's face it, it can be challenging at times, parenting a child with any long-term condition. I mean, it's not rocket science. You don't need to be a psychologist to know that. Parenting can be difficult full stop, let alone when there's a additional travel to hospital, applications of treatment, you having to witness your child experience pain, missed schooling, etc. It's tricky for parents. So yeah, there's some evidence already from previous studies that we've done across the board with skin conditions. And there was a study that we did a few years ago funded by PAPA, Psoriasis and Psoriatic Arthritis Association, which suggests that the interventions that we're going to develop will work, but we do need to build it from the bottom up. And that's why having the opportunity to consult with members of the BDNG and take their expertise is so important, to get it right for families.
Absolutely. I mean, you've done amazing work so far, and to reach out as well to the BDNG has been fantastic. And how can nurses and BDNG members, you know, with experience in EB, how can they support or contribute to this project?
Well, we're currently advertising for people to be interviewed, to take part in a briefing interview, to really tell us and share with us tips from practice. So what is it that you do yourself already? Where do you signpost people to? What resources do you do? What do you do from your daily nursing practice to help provide that holistic care? And what can we perhaps extract from that to share more broadly with parents in a way that they can utilise that if they don't get an opportunity to go to perhaps to one of the specialist services, or if they do, that they'll be able to hook into this later and read it when they're at home by being able to get access to it through the Deborah website.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important for our members, you know, or people listening to this podcast to reach out, really, isn't it, to, you know, contribute as much information as possible. We are advertising on the BDNG e-newsletter, and this is going out every week, so there is a contact details there as well, and also we're trying to get the message out via social media as well. Obviously we have Olivia and Andrew today promoting you know, anyone that can contribute to this amazing project, and are also going to be doing some publishing within the BDNG journal as well, just to promote this project. So we're trying to do as much sort of advertising, is that the right word, as possible, because it is such an important aspect of care for these people that need that valuable support. Have we got any, I'll go back to you, Olivia, with this. Have we got a time frame for any of this project? Have you got certain timelines, or is it ongoing, or how is it going to be?
So the project is 2.5 years in total. We are currently recruiting now. So we would like to speak to any dermatology nurses with relevant experience. At the moment, we're currently taking on interviews, and we're currently interviewing. So that would be really helpful. I mean, as Andrew mentioned earlier, I was lucky enough to spend some time with the dermatology team in Great Ormond Street Hospital. And just to say, the dermatologists and the dermatology nurses were such an incredibly valued part of the team of care. They were valued by all of the families, and they were there supporting the families, supporting the parents, supporting the children through every step of the way with their diagnosis and their treatment. So really, they were just a hugely valued part of the team. And tapping into those insights would be so helpful for us to design a sustainable resource that we can put together for parents. So any dermatology nurses with any experience of EB, we would like to speak to them now, as we are currently interviewing. So that would be really helpful.
Absolutely, Olivia, and we'll do our best. And we actually are in the very early stages of planning sort of a rare sort of skin disease regional day. So I think, you know, for you guys to be represented there as well, which will be really positive, which will be going out. We will definitely, you know, involve this project in that day, just to sort of reach out to more of our members as well. So we will work on that together, definitely. Andrew, going back to you, is there any sort of key aspects for our listeners today, any key aspects that you want to inform our listeners about, or anything that they can take away from this podcast today?
Oh, that's a big question. I mean, just going back, first of all, to what Olivia was saying about who we're interested in speaking to, it is the full MDT that are involved in supporting parents. And we are, of course, interviewing parents as well, and we've got another project where we're interviewing siblings as well, so we can get that sort of wider perspective. And we've already been lucky to speak to dietitians physiotherapists, but we hope to speak to dietitians as well as nurses and obviously medics as well. I guess in terms of sort of top tips, really, I guess, because we're after getting tips from nurses in how can we learn from what's going on in current practice to build this toolkit. But I guess as psychologists, we often and worked for many years with BDNG to provide additional support and contribute to educational events, whether it be around sort of habit reversal or around use of mindfulness techniques or assessment. And I think the top tip, and I know a lot of this goes on anyway in routine practice, but it's so busy in routine practice, particularly nowadays with the pressures that are out there, that assessment can sometimes feel like a luxury, and it's getting that holistic assessment and always putting that forward. And one top tip I always have for that is that you don't necessarily need to always use quality of life measures, although they can be very, very helpful, particularly where if there's a study going on or if you need that further information. It's asking people how they are and asking people what impact it's having and giving people the permission to talk about. And that, of course, that's true for all skin conditions. And also, I don't know, nurses often do this anyway, but also particularly with children, asking about that of the families as well, because obviously it's the family that's crucially involved in supporting the treatment regime that you're prescribing or and advocating. So it's enabling them to do that and removing any barriers such as stress can really be facilitative to engagement with the treatment and overcoming problems with adherence and so on. And it all starts with asking how people are more broadly, because clinic time's so pressured that, you know, patients are often already taking off their clothes, ready to be looked at, or already talking about how the physical treatments, and often it's just giving them permission to talk about how they are in themselves.
That's a great point, Andrew. And it is, even though under restricted times, you know, it's treating that person as an individual and giving that opportunity to speak about how they feel, because, you know, not everybody opens up. So, you know, as a nurse, as somebody that's in that consultation, it's really important to build up that trust relationship, but allow that person to say, you know, this is having a big impact on how, you know, our daily lives, and this is how it's affecting us. And like Olivia mentioned earlier, you know, it's not just the person, it's the mum, the dad, the siblings, it impacts everything, you know, traveling to all these appointments and, you know, taking time out of school, all these things impact, you know, normal life that we take for granted. So it's a really good point to get these people to open up.
Yeah, and there are quality of life measures available that I'm sure many people are aware of, such as the Cardiff suite of measures, which include quality of life measures that are aimed at identifying what's going on for the family as well as the affected individual, and they can be useful as follow-up structured tools as well. And on the BAD website now, there's increasing coverage of some of the briefer tools, like for adults, like the PHQ brief version, which can often also be useful and slotted into busy clinics. But yeah, it there's no substitute for using the nursing relationship to ask how people are in the first instance.
Absolutely. I think, you know, and it's also these absolutely quality of life tools, you know, the tools that you've mentioned, resources, valuable tools, but again, it's discussing them with the patient, you know, not just looking at the scores and adding it up. It's opening up, because these tools can provide valuable information when you have that discussion with your patients as well. Definitely. So I'm going to go back to you, Olivia. Obviously we've discussed a lot about the, you know, the support, the psychological support, the tools in place. Again, this sort of similar question to yourself: what's the key aspects, you know, for our listeners today on this podcast? What would you like to say to our listeners listening to this valuable podcast today?
I think it's just the fact that I think involving multidisciplinary care in looking after children, every different healthcare professional brings their own set of expertise. And I think what we're trying to do is use everyone's skills combined to create the most useful toolkit that we possibly can. So I think any help that we can have from dermatology nurses in particular, dermatologists, dietitians, psychologists, if we all pull together and, you know, contribute insights that we can usefully put into developing a support resource, we can really work together to improving support for parents that are providing care for children with such a rare skin condition. And I think dermatology nurses are such a central part of that, in terms of supporting the families through, you know, they're there for them as they transition through pediatric services into adult services. They form very close relationships with children, and they really are a central support system for pediatric patients. So I think any insights, any, you know, any experiences that we can draw on to usefully apply into designing a support toolkit would be really, really helpful.
Oh, that's a really good point as well, Olivia. And I think, you know, anyone listening today that's got any experience there with EB or any information, again, to get in touch. And you can always get in touch via the BDNG as well. I'm happy to pass any information on to Andrew and Olivia. Olivia, a quick question about, you know, you mentioned about the specialist hospitals, you know, that patients may be referred to with EB. Have you been in touch with all of the hospitals involved in EB? Is that something you've done with this resource?
We've had a really good response. We've managed to put together an expert panel of dermatology nurses, dermatologists, parents in a steering group that are going to be leading the research. And we have got representation from the specialist centres across the UK. So that's been really, really helpful. And they've been incredible in giving us insights and feedback and support with the project. And that's another way that we're trying to integrate experts by experience into the toolkit to make sure that we have feedback from real parents who have, you know, these concerns on a daily basis and really take their insights into account. So we have got really good representation from a range of different healthcare professionals on our steering group, which has been invaluable.
Oh, that is really invaluable, and to have such a good steering group, it can definitely drive this research, you know, project through. Definitely, it makes a massive difference. And Andrew, going back to you, with, you know, you've got 2.5 years really to with this project as well. And again, any of our listeners listening today, you know, wanting to give this information, can it just be as little information as possible, or do they have to provide quite a bit of information just for, you know, to any sort of anything that's more valuable to yourselves, or any sort of past experiences? Is this all the things you want to learn from our listeners today?
Well, I guess we're interested in speaking to any of the listeners that have direct experience of supporting families with EB and providing treatment and nursing care or medical care. And yeah, we're grateful for any information. I mean, the interviews can we allow, you know, up to an hour for the interview that we have with people, but they can be shorter than that. And yeah, we'll tailor it to what people can share with us.
That's great. And Andrew, would this, you know, if there's a nurse out there that has a patient or parents with EB, is that something that you would, you know, would you be interviewing them as well? Is that something that you would do, or with their permission, obviously?
We are interviewing parents, and we're also doing a survey with parents. We obviously need to them to consent to be approached and so on, but we're very happy for nurses to signpost people. We have ethical approval to recruit via the Deborah charity and via non-NHS sources. So we aren't recruiting directly from NHS clinics at the moment. We're recruiting via social media and via community sources, including Deborah International for our survey and for the interview for both healthcare professionals and parents as well. So we're very happy for nurses to pass on that information. It just can't be done directly through NHS clinics at the moment, because we're recruiting via community sources. And the project sounds like it might be quite a long project, but these things always take a bit of time to build properly from the bottom up, and we are following sort of tried and tested methods of developing psychological support and developing interventions in general. So we're sort of broadly following the Medical Research Council advice to sort of have expert involvement early on in the development of your toolkit. So you don't get there later on and find that people don't even understand what it's about, or it doesn't make sense. So that's what this phase of it's all about. And then eventually we'll hope that there'll be a legacy of the project in the form of the toolkit being available on the Deborah UK website, possibly on Deborah International's website as well, which then healthcare professionals will be able to signpost to as well.
Oh, fantastic. And, you know, just to give patients and parents and families hope that this is being, you know, actually it's a project that is in the making, just makes a huge difference. It really does. And I think even for nurses to be able to say this, you know, to the families, it just gives great hope. You know, so it just make a massive difference even at the early stages. Olivia, when did you actually start this project? Quick question there.
It started in January of this year.
And Andrea, has there been a lot of uptake since you started? Do we need to create more of a presence?
We would really.
Sorry.
You can answer.
You go, Andrew.
I was going to say that so some of the early phases of the project have involved us scoping the literature as well to look at interventions that are already out there for targeting different conditions, obviously doing a late academic sort of literature search to support the work we're doing, building the steering group that Olivia mentioned earlier in terms of getting expert, both patient and professional input into developing both the methods for the study as well as eventually the toolkit itself. And in terms of recruitment to both our survey and the interview, like we've said, I'm sorry to the listeners to keep plugging it, but yeah, the recruitment's open for both of those studies, and I guess most relevant for listeners will be the healthcare professional studying. I'm sure there'll be links on the BDNG podcast so people can get in touch with us, or they could just Google us at Cardiff, Olivia or myself, and email us, and we'll be happy to send out information on the study.
Absolutely, yes. And we've got all the links. We'll definitely connect all the links to this podcast as well. And like you say, it's just getting it known, isn't it? And for people to reach out. And, you know, I'm sure our listeners, anyone that has anything to offer today, will definitely be reaching out to you, definitely, without a doubt. I have to commend both of you. You're doing amazing work. You really are. And I think, you know, to have this psychological support in, you know, just even at the beginning is fantastic. And as I said, just to have this in the making is a great project. And it's to make people aware, really, isn't it? It's the awareness of the project and for our dermatology nurses to get in contact. Quick question before we leave Olivia as well. Primary care, you've obviously mentioned. I guess you're working with the primary care sector as well, as in, you know, have you contacted them to promote, you know, to get in touch as well?
Yeah, I mean, our study is being shared quite widely. So we're just hoping that, you know, doing things like this and having the opportunity to come on and talk to you on the podcast today, anything that we can do to get the word out about our project and the fact that we are recruiting now and we are currently holding interviews would be incredibly helpful. And I think, you know, just a huge part of it is getting the project out there and advertising the research as an ongoing opportunity. So yeah.
That's great. Absolutely fantastic. The more people we reach out to, the better. Definitely. I think this is the motto of this podcast, really, to get people known about what is happening, the valuable work that is out there. And I'd just like to round up this podcast today by saying a massive thank you to both of you. You are doing phenomenal work. You know, there's going to be so many families and so many people that are out there with EB that are just going to be so grateful, and healthcare professionals as well, because as I say, just to have something even in the pipeline can make a big difference in that consultation. Final words, Andrew, is there anything you would like just to add before we leave this podcast today?
No, just again, Tina, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this specific project. And as always, thank you to the BDNG for all the work that you do in supporting the dermatology community.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Olivia, any final words from yourself?
Oh, just a massive thank you for having us on the podcast today. It's been a privilege to speak to you and talk to your listeners as well. So thank you for having us.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to both of you. And for our listeners today, if we have on the BDNG e-newsletter, we have all the information there. We will be linking this podcast into social media, and also we will be discussing this further within the journal. So anyone that wants to reach out, anyone that wants any more information on this, anyone that can help, you can either reach out to myself, the BDNG, or Olivia and Andrew as well, and all the details will be contained within the BDNG website and the e-newsletter as well. So thank you again both. Very fascinating podcast today, and it's been an absolute honour to speak with both of you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tina. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.